Thank you. Sure, thank you so much. So first of all, I just want to make an announcement for anyone who is watching this or is here and is not on the WhatsApp group, this beautiful Lunch and Learn lesson that is presented by me, Hinti Comston, and Cece. You can get onto that WhatsApp group by contacting Mrs. Wolf. So reach out if you want to, and you can get onto that group so you never miss a class. I also want to say that this class was begun in honor of Lira Tova Bas Rachman. It's a class in honor of her because she would come here with her children. And we wanted to start a learning group that was open to children coming and all of us kind of not getting disturbed by children, and that being in the ambiance of Chassidus and learning and how that can directly impact them. So it is a mother children's learning group. So if you hear any of the sounds, we welcome that, and it's beautiful and feel comfortable. And this is going to be, God willing, a journey through the Tanya. So last week, we discussed a little bit of an introduction to the Tanya. I explained what Chassidus is and where Chassidus stems from and what happened throughout history that Chassidus came about. And it's important to understand that before you go into the Tanya, kind of what prompted the Bala Tanya to even write the Tanya is something that we discussed last week. Then we touched upon the very first page of the Tanya, which is crucial because the Alter Rebbe wrote it himself, and it kind of gives a focus on what is going to be discussed in the Tanya. So imagine like if there was like the back flap to a Tanya and you're like, hey, what's this book about? That's this page right here. We're going to basically hear what is the purpose here and what is this whole book going to do for me? Basically, how am I going to achieve any sort of results from the Tanya? So we're going to look at that. If you have the papers, it's in front of you. It's the very first part of it. And I know that we're not supposed to be so much going into the text, but I did find on someone's suggestion last week that it would be super helpful to have something to base this class on. So I gave you the text. If you want to look at it, you can. If it's distracting, don't look at it. But for some people, it might be super helpful. So let's start from the very beginning and understand what is the modus operandi over here from the Alter Rebbe. So it's important to remember that the Bala Tanya wrote this because there was a lot of copywriting and because there was a problem with people criticizing what the Bala Tanya was saying. So it's very important for him to get it published and for it to be in a form that nobody can mess around with the text. So understanding this and understanding that he went with this with a lot of intention, it's important to also approach every single word that the Bala Tanya is using here and realize that he did it with intention. So let's look at this first page and let's understand where he's coming from. So just from the top, very quickly, we'll start reading. It says Sefer Shelbeinonim. We spoke about last week the idea that it's called the Sefer Shelbeinonim because this Sefer, this book, is geared towards the intermediate. And when we're saying intermediate, the way Chaim Miller, who wrote a book on the Tanya, the way he calls it is the in-betweener, the person who is struggling. So I like to say it, the struggler, the person who is struggling with life. He's struggling with his humanness and he's struggling with his identifying with his godly soul, with the human part of himself and then the very altruistic, spiritual, godly part of himself. And he's constantly struggling between the two, and he never really finds himself in one world or the other. That's what we're going to be discussing here. This is who the Tanya is written for. So the Alter Rebbe named it Sefer Shelbeinonim because it's not a Sefer for Tzaddikim, it's a Sefer for the intermediate person, the person who finds himself in the category of one who is striving towards Beinuni. And we'll talk about that towards the end of the class. But the idea is that this is geared towards us. This is a very relevant Sefer. It's not just some philosophical Sefer. It's literally written out, compiled, and created with the intention of us growing and striving from this book. Okay, it's supposed to be very practical and down to earth. It's not supposed to be ethereal. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. This is, again, not chapter one. This is him giving his objective for what the book is supposed to be about. He says, Melukat mepi svarim And we peace say for him. And we spoke last week basically saying the humility, the humbleness of the Bala Tanya, where he says that this is him collecting. This is a collection of different teachers and from different people who I have learned from. This is a very humble way of saying that I haven't come up with anything new and novel here, which is not really the very truth, because the Tanya does have absolutely incredible insights into the Torah that were not spoken about before. But the idea here is that this is representing the Alter Rebbe's deep belief, actually, that what he's getting from is sourced in Kabbalah and in the Torah. So he says that he's collecting it from his teachers, and then Hashem is in Gan Eden, and he says the whole book, this entire book, is based on this one pasuk, Ki karev elecha adavar ma'ay b'ficha u'buvav falaseise. And we spoke about last week a little bit about what that means, but I want to go deeper into it because it's really important to lay the foundation for what the entire book's premise is. So that's why I gave you the source on the other side, or the other page that you have in front of you, so we can understand a little bit more of what this pasuk is. So let's go back into Devarim, the fifth book of the Torah, and we'll go into the actual pasukim right before this pasuk that the whole entire Tanya is based on. Understand the context of what this pasuk is even talking about, and then from there we could go into the concept of what the Alter Rebbe was trying to say. So we have to understand a little bit of how it's understood according to Nigla, according to just a very simple understanding of, or a very, I don't want to say superficial, but not too deep understanding of what this pasuk is, and then we'll get to the other layers. So if you turn to the very first pasuk, it's pasuk Yud Aleph. The pasuk that the Tanya is based on is pasuk Yud Dalet, but I went back a little bit so that you could have a little bit of context. I'm going to read it in English so it's easier for those of you who are juggling babies to understand. For this commandment, which I command you this day, is not concealed from you, nor is it far away. Ki ha-mitzvah ha-zais. Okay? He says, this commandment that I'm speaking to you about, it's not concealed from you, it's not far away, it's not in the heaven, that you should say, who will go up to heaven for us and fetch it for us to tell us so we can fulfill it? It's not something remote. Okay, and I'm going to continue, and then we'll go into Rashi in a minute. Nor is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will cross to the other side of the sea for us and fetch it for us to tell it to us so we can fulfill it? Rather, this thing is very close to you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so you can fulfill it. So what is the it, right? So what is the pronoun here that we're talking about? What is he referring to? So what we're talking about here when we say it's this matter, this thing, this mitzvah, it's all a reference to living your life according to Judaism, the concept of living a Torah-dic life, being a Jew. And the way Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, in the words of Hashem, this is not something that is remote to you. This is not something that is hard for you to do. And when he says, Lei b'shamayin hi, Rashi comments on this concept of Lei b'shamayin hi. It's not remote from you. It's not in the heavens. And Rashi says, for if it were in the heaven, you would have to climb up after it in order to learn it. Okay? So what is Rashi bringing here? He's bringing a very deep explanation. He's saying, if you start contemplating what your life is, the amount of bounty that you have in your life, the goodness that you have in your life, and then reflect on the financial goodness that you have, the children that you have, the health, the fact that you live in a beautiful world, the ease, right? And you're really in that space of gratitude. And then you think, okay, what can I do back for God? He's saying here, what you can do for me is live a Jewish lifestyle. I want you to fulfill the mitzvahs. Yes? And I want you to do it in a way that you can fulfill it with your beficha, ubuvav falaseis. So you should do it with your mouth and with your heart, and you should do it with your actions. You should actually do mitzvahs. Rashi is bringing something very fascinating in here. He's saying, we're saying that it's not in the heavens. Because if you really thought about the idea that God gives you everything and you should probably do something, you know, in return. If God gave us the Torah in the heavens, right? If he demanded that every single moment of our lives, we should be contemplating him. We should be in an absolute euphoria over him. And every single second, our mind should be contemplating him. We would have to do it because look at what he's given us. He's put us on this world. He's given us all this bounty and he's commanded us to live this life, and therefore this is the Torah that he's given us, so now we have to do it. What Hashem is basically saying is, I didn't give that to you. I didn't give you a Torah that demands you to be in the heavens all the time. I didn't demand you that you have to swim across the ocean in order to fulfill all of my commandments. I could have done that, but I didn't. All I'm asking you to do is fulfill my commandments with your mouth, with your heart, with your mind. And even that we really struggle with. We have a very hard time even fulfilling the mitzvahs with our actions. And this pasuk, right, this concept of Hashem is not, from his perspective, not demanding much from us. From our perspective, it feels like a lot. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, it's very close to you. It's not a big deal. Kikar ve'lecha, it's reachable. It's attainable. And our very human on the job experience and responses is actually really challenging for us. So the Alter Rebbe is bringing this pasuk, and he's basically going to be outlining this entire sefer based on this pasuk to explain to us how it is attainable and bridge the gap between Moshe Rabbeinu's words reflecting Hashem's words and our very human experience and saying it is attainable. It's not something that we're just hearing a command from God, like, yeah, you can do this, not a big deal. And for us to feel like you have no understanding of what it is like to be human. And instead, the Tanya is trying to bridge that gap and say, no, this is within your ability, and I'm going to show you how. So again, this is a workbook. It's going to bring us to that spirituality with our very human self. Okay? So I wanted to bring those psukim. So that you could really understand where we're coming from. This is that pasuk in the Torah that we're basing it all off of. So now let's go into the rest of this small, slight introduction, this purpose of the entire book. And he says, in order to understand how this is close to you, I'm going to give you two ways of looking at it. And he says, "Biderech aruka uksara," which means the long way and the short way. Or the way, basically he's saying here, "Biderech aruka uksara," which means the long way and the short way, God willing. Now, when he says that, this is a reference to a Gemara of a story where a man is approaching a town and he sees that there's two different ways to enter this town. There's a fork in the road, right? Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and he didn't know what to do. So he sees this young boy at the fork in the road, and he asks him, which way leads to the city? And the boy says, do you want the long, short way, or do you like the short, long way? And the man thinks, okay, this is just a play on words. Long, short way, I'll go with the short, long way, right? The shorter way. That's probably more literal. So he says, I'll go with the short, long way. He takes that route, and when he gets closer to seeing how that route kind of plays out, he sees this like quagmire in front of him filled with like scorpions and all sorts of bugs, and it's muddy, and it's very difficult to traverse through this terrain to get to the city. But, you know, speaking like if you're looking at the mileage, it's very short, but the actual path is a mud run, okay? It's very, very complicated. So he goes back and he goes to the fork and he says, okay, I'll go to the other, I'll try the long short way. And when he looks at it, the mileage is greater, obviously, but it's clean, it's well-maintained, it's the well-trodden path. And this is just a story in the Gemara. And the Alter Rebbe is referencing to this story to teach you two things. But the Alter Rebbe is going to be outlining for us how to make Torah and living a Jewish lifestyle reachable. But there's two different ways to do it. There's the long, short way, and there's the short, long way. And there's two different ways to do those two different ways. So just, I don't want you to get lost. But he basically says throughout the Tanya, there's the longer way, which is contemplating on God. And if contemplating on God helps you intellectually integrate that more into your experience, then that will take a longer time, but that's the long, short way. It will help you bring God into your life so that now you could effectively think about him all the time. So now your actions, right, living that Torah lifestyle, your heart, your mind, and your mouth are thinking about God because you're in that space. And so contemplating on God will bring you to serve him in kind of like that smoother way. And that's how it's accessible to you. And then the shorter way, right, that's the long, short way. There's the Tanya, the Bala Tanya is basically saying there's no shortcuts, right? That's basically the way that we're going to be getting there. There's no way to just press a button and suddenly live the Torah lifestyle. But then the shorter way would be to uncover the innate love or the innate fear that we already have for God. And if we could uncover that and find that within ourselves, that will like give us a flash of insight and allow us to proceed to live a Torah lifestyle. Those two different ways are the ways that the Tanya is going to be talking about how we can integrate this concept of it's not far from you. It's within reach to live a Torah lifestyle. The other way he talks about, and this is kind of the way he splits up the Tanya, is chapters 1 through 17 basically outline the concept of your mind can rule over your heart. And so even if you feel the impulse to not live a Torah lifestyle, your mind controls your heart, and you could still practically live a Torah lifestyle because your mind is controlling you. And then the other aspect that he talks about between chapters 18 and 25 is, again, similar to what we were talking about before, is the concept of Mesiras Nefesh, that if you tap into that space of Mesiras Nefesh, it basically shifts your whole entire perspective, like a person who, let's say, is in a state of trauma, right? And then they can lift a car. They could run remarkable marathons. They could do things that they never thought were possible for them. So if you awaken that part of yourself, then you could also live this incredibly connected lifestyle with God. These are all different ways that the Bala Tanya is going to help us make practical and real for us to actually live according to this pasuk, Ki karev elecha adavar ma'id, that it's easier for you. It's within reach. How? The long, short way or the short, long way? We're going to give you both. That's what the Bala Tanya is saying on this title page. Everyone with me so far? Yes? Okay, good. Because that's the more complicated part. And now we're getting into the easier part to understand things. Okay, so with that said, there's that title page. You turn over the page on the Tanya, and you have the approbations, which are letters of approval for this beautiful work. The Alter Rebbe sent them to three different people, and those are the letters. We don't have to go into it here, but they are very beautiful. What's interesting about them is that they both respected the Bala Tanya's desire to remain anonymous in the Tanya. So they reference to, let's say, the Baal Shem Tov, they'll reference to other tzaddikim, but they won't actually mention the Bala Tanya because they knew that he wanted to remain anonymous and not have his presence in the Tanya. So that's just a beautiful thing that they were really honoring his humility there. So next, after the approbations, you get to the compiler's foreword, which is his, again, the Bala Tanya's introduction to the entire Tanya. And this is a few pages long, in which he's explaining, why did I write this? I already explained it last class, but very quickly, the Bala Tanya just didn't have enough time to meet with every single one of his chassidim and give them a direction for what their Avaitas Hashem was supposed to be. In the beginning, the Bala Tanya would have what was called a special meeting between him and a chassid. The very first meeting would be one about learning, and after that, he would have a meeting with them about what their approach should be to their life, and specifically in the realm of Avaitas Hashem. So these chassidim would be preparing themselves for years to just sit with the Alter Rebbe for maybe, 30 minutes to an hour or maybe longer to get that insight on what their specific approach should be and how they serve God. And he couldn't do it anymore. There were too many chassidim. There were too many people remotely reaching out to him who were asking him for this derech avedas Hashem via letters. And so it just became more practical to write it down and compile it for everybody and get it published so that it was sealed for everybody to really trust that this is the information that the Bala Tanya was trying to give over to everybody. Now, the chassidim didn't want that, right? They wanted that personal, deep connection of having a true meeting with him of the souls. And so there is like still that resistance. And so here in this introduction, the Alter Rebbe is comforting chassidim and saying, I am definitely speaking to you personally in this book. This book is not just made for everyone. Read it as if I'm speaking to you personally, as if we're having our own one-on-one meeting, and really treat it as such. And what's important also, what we could also gain from this, and this is actually something that I didn't know myself, is the Alter Rebbe says the whole entire Tanya, the entire 53 chapters, are not meant for you specifically. Not every single chapter is supposed to be owned by you. Just like every one of us have something in the Torah, a sentence, a pasuk, an idea, a concept that just resonates, that feels like this is ours. Or each and every one of us maybe has a mitzvah that feels like I resonate with this mitzvah. Some people it's davening, some people it's tzedakah, some people it's chesed, making sure that you're taking care of other people. Everyone has their own, you know, some people it's, it could be really any sort of pasuk, and you'll hear stories of people like make this their pasuk, which is so beautiful. The same thing also with the Sefer of the Tanya. Not every single chapter is your chapter. What's up to us in learning all of it is to find what chapter resonates the most with me. What chapter is mine that I can make my Avodas Hashem? And that's up to you to discover. And if you need help, the Alter Rebbe says in the introduction, what's important is to find a teacher who can teach it to you, who can make it relevant to you, who can help you discover what is your Avodas Hashem. And the Alter Rebbe was saying, I'm empowering and I'm also dictating the teachers to have the responsibility and accountability to take care of the people who are learning Tanya. Teach them, help them, be an ambassador for my message of this is the way to serve God. Okay? So that's what the introduction is. And it's really important to understand that because, like I said at the last class, it's with a lot of humility, it's very humbling for me to step into that space of being a teacher because I feel like I'm learning it with you. And at the same time, what I'm trying to do also here is empower you that if you're learning the Tanya now, you could also teach these concepts to other people and allow, share them, share these concepts with other people. If this is somehow a way to serve God and feel more connected to God through this class or through learning the Tanya, then share it with others. That might be the spark that allows them to decide, hey, I also want to serve God in this way. I also feel like this resonates. After of Tanya, it's important to share this quick story. So there was a man, his name was Reb Itzchol. He lived in Borough Park. And his son was getting married. So he decided to have a one-on-one encounter with the Friedrich Rebbe. This is in the 40s. And he met with the Friedrich Rebbe and his son, the Chassin, who was going to get married. And they were having a long discussion. They had a beautiful connection. They had a friendship. And so what started in the conversation was the Friedrich Rebbe asking this Chassan what he was learning, and the man told him what he was learning in the Gemara at that time. And so the Friedrich Rebbe asks him a pretty basic question that comes up in the Gemara, and he answers it. And then the Friedrich Rebbe asks him another question on the answer that he gave, and the Chassan was stumped. He didn't have an answer. And so then the Friedrich Rebbe proceeded to explain to him according to the level of Torah, which is called sight. Sight is secrets. And what's important to understand too, and the reason why I'm bringing this story is, there's four different ways of learning the Torah. There's pshat, which is the simple explanation, which is usually Rashi. Rashi learned the Torah and he wrote his commentary on the Torah built so that a five-year-old of his times will be able to have a deeper but pshat understanding of what the psukim are talking about or what the Gemara is talking about, right? So pshat is a simple explanation. A little bit deeper than pshat is remes, which usually means hint. And a deeper explanation, and it basically will cover the limitations of what you've discovered in pshat. Whatever you didn't feel really answered your question with the pshat understanding of the pasuk or whatever it is that you're looking at, remes should kind of help you understand the limitations of pshat. Next level is drush. Drush is deeper explanation. And whatever the limitation of remes was, that level of hinting, and you feel like there's a limitation there, drush should help with that limitation and kind of make up for whatever it is that you still feel is like not really explaining to you the concepts that we're discussing here. And then there's the limitation on drush. And the limitation of drush is completed by the concept of sight. Chassidus and Tanya, which is basically the father of Chassidus, the magnum opus of Chassidus when it comes to the Alter Rebbe's Chassidus, basically comes from that level of understanding Torah, which is called sight. Sight is the secrets of Torah. And it basically brings anything that was lacking from all the other layers of understanding of Torah is completed with sight. So in this story, the Fidei Rebbe responds to this question on his answer, on the Chassan's answer, with an understanding of sight. And the man was blown away with this understanding. And he walked out of the Chassidus, the Yechidus, this one-on-one encounter with the Fidei Rebbe, thinking, I kind of feel like any question that could ever come up in Gemara, in the Torah, that I would ever have, and I would never understand like the true answer for it. I feel like the Fidei Rebbe could offer me an answer based on the side understanding, and all my questions would just melt away. And why that encounter, that story is so important is because everything in this Sefer is going to be side. It's going to be secrets of Torah. It's going to be stripping away at the limitations that we'll find in the other explanations. So here, when we're going to go into the very first parak of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe is going to start off with Gemara. He's going to start off with an explanation of the Gemara and basically show you how it doesn't feel right. There's still some loopholes there. I'm seeing limitation. And then he offers the side explanation to it, and then everything falls into place. Okay, so he starts out with the pshat, the remez, the drush, these other layers, and then he dives right into the site and then continues with the rest of the entire sefer being secrets of the Torah, that level of sight. Okay, and then that's why he was saying it's based on Kabbalah, because Kabbalah, of course, it's the secrets of the Torah. Everyone with me so far? Okay, feel free to ask a question if you have one. So coming back to what the whole purpose of the entire Sefer is, which is to speak to in-betweener, the struggler, the intermediate person, right away, the Alter Rebbe dives into understanding what is a person. So he talks about it right away in the beginning, and he says, let's start from the way the Gemara translates people and basically defines people and puts people into categories. When the Gemara talks about a person, he says, Tzadik, Beinoni, Rasha. And the way the Gemara explains that is a tzaddik, the Gemara is speaking from the perspective of a court system, right? The Gemara is the beginning of where we draw halacha from. So it's all based on judging a person as if you were in court, okay? So these terms are based on judgment and the end result. It's not really a person because there's a whole person there. It's about the verdict. Okay, so the tzaddik is a person who, according to the courts and the way that the entire way that they analyze whatever it is that this person did, if they decided according to the courts that he is 51%, right, a little bit more just, meaning he was right, he's considered a tzaddik. If he was faulty, so he's 51% at fault, then he's considered a Rasha. If he's exactly 50-50, then he's put into this category of his future actions will determine what we think of him, okay? So it's very, very extreme. It's very much based on almost 1%, right? So if you're 51% in this area, then you're considered a tzaddik. If you're 51% not just, if you're fault, you're at fault for whatever it is, you're considered a Rasha, and you're going to be this punitive judgment. And then if they can't really decide because there's a 50-50 chance that you did it or you didn't, whatever it is, then you're considered a Beinoni and you're basically on probation, right? You're like on a trial period. And what your future actions are going to do is going to determine what will happen to you, if you're going to be punished or if you're going to be redeemed, okay? So in discussing this, one of the people in the Gemara, whose name is Rabba, he declares, and I'm trying to understand how we categorize people, he said, I, for example, I am a Beinoni. And Abaya, who is in the same learning arena as Rabbah, they're learning together, or maybe Rabbah was in front of a class and he was teaching, Abaya was in the study hall together. He says, Master, you make it impossible for any creature to live, right? If Rabbah, who was an absolute tzaddik, calls himself a benini, then what are we? We're like cockroaches, you know? What are we going to amount to? We're nothing. So after defining what tzaddik and rasha and benini means, according to the pshat understanding, according to the Gemara, now Trevor proceeds to bring up a lot of different questions on why, basically bringing the limitations of the pshat understanding, or even the remez understanding of what is a tzaddik and a benini and a rasha. And the reason why the Alter Rebbe has to do this is because he's now helping us understand who we are. We can't work from anywhere if we don't understand what our identity is. That's what we were talking about last class. You can't enter into any sort of self-work if you don't know who I am, right? What category do I fit into? I can't work from somewhere if I don't have a basis, a foundation from whence I'm coming, right? And I gave you the example last week, but for some people who are in here, typical example of, let's say, a dieting program, you could be dieting and trying to exercise and make sure that I'm eating healthy. And so when you're looking at your day, you're saying, okay, I really don't want to do this, but I'm going to exercise because I have to lose weight. And I'm going to choose to have fruit in the morning instead of, you know, fruity pebbles because I'm trying to be healthy now. And so you can basically constantly be making choices between who you really are, which is not a healthy person who doesn't eat healthy, and then taking the healthful choice because that's what you have to do right now to get to your goal. But not necessarily is that going to be a long-term goal. Why? Because at a certain point, you're going to get to your goal weight, hopefully, and then things are going to start sliding because your true identity is, I don't eat healthy, I love junk food. As opposed to what a lot of the self-help books say today is, you'll always see almost the first chapter is always going to start with identity. How do you identify yourself? Do you identify yourself as a junk food person? Do you identify yourself as a health food person? And you have to start working on my identity. So if you start shifting to, no, I'm actually a healthful person, and I not just want to choose the healthy option, I am someone who chooses the healthy option, it starts becoming less of a choice between the fruity pebbles and the fruit of the morning, because the fruity pebbles don't even kind of like measure up anymore because it's not part of your reality. I don't identify with fruity pebbles. I identify with fruits and milkshake, or not milkshake, fruit shake. You can see what I am. a fruit shake or a smoothie. Or whatever it is that option is, because that's going to become part of your identity. Your whole kitchen is going to change, right? Every part of your life, your lifestyle is going to change. So, Lahavdil, here the Tanya is starting off with, let's find out which category we fall into. Technically, we know we're supposed to be the baby, right? We know we're supposed to be falling into that category. But here, the Alter Rebbe is basically bringing in the beginning that Rabbah is calling himself a baby. Where does that leave us? So now the Alter Rebbe is going to give us a totally new definition for what tzaddik, benini, and rasha is. And from there, we're going to understand how we can start finding our way in serving God. So instead of looking at tzaddik from, this is again, this is the Bala Tanya's insight, okay? Instead of looking at a tzaddik as someone who is 51% good, or just, we're working away from the court system and working away from judging ourselves, and instead looking at the actual being, the way we are created. And the way the Bala Tanya describes the tzaddik is someone who is literally created without a yetzer hara. Okay, so this person who is created, and he quotes inside, he brings a quote from the Gemara where a tzaddik basically has a hollowed part of his heart, where he doesn't have an evil inclination seated in him with desires and lusts and impulses. He doesn't even have that. It's not an option for him to even sin. This is the way the Bala Tanya starts out the Tanya, saying, this is a tzaddik. Okay? This is not Sefer Shel Tzaddikim. We're not even talking about this person. We're going to be talking about the Benini, but kind of like to put that out, he describes us, this is not any of us. This is not relevant to you because all of us have an evil inclination. So then, potential to sin. The Rosh is someone who has sinned once, plus, one plus. Okay, that's a Rosh. The Beinoni is the person who has the ability, the potential to sin. It has not been carved out of his heart, but he never shifts to actually making the sin, doing the sin, following the lust of his heart. So he has it. He has the ability to sin, but he doesn't follow through with it. He resists. He focuses entirely on living a godly lifestyle. And I know some of you are thinking, well, we were just talking about how this is so attainable and this is a workbook within reach. And you're thinking, how is it even possible to get to a state of Beinoni when I've already sinned? Right? I've already been in that category. I think I could probably think of one time that I sinned. And the idea here is that we're not sitting in a court system. We're shifting away from judgment, from limitation. Because like we probably know, we've sinned before and Hashem has cleaned our slate. We have the concept of teshuvah. So the idea is Sefer Shel Beinonim means it's geared towards us, the people who are striving to become a Beinoni. It doesn't mean a Beinoni in the extreme terms. I know for myself, who is a recovering perfectionist. So the idea of like a Beinoni, right, is it's always recovery with that. So the idea is like, how could I ever get there? I can never actually achieve that because I have sins, right? It gets very extreme when you start putting the labels. So the concept is we're putting labels here in order for us to understand the definition of it. And then the rest of the whole Sefer is working away from labeling ourselves or judging ourselves because that's not at all going to help us in our Avodas Hashem. Anytime we put a judgment on ourselves, it's just a limitation. Anytime we put a judgment on another, it's just a limitation. So it's hard to understand, but right now we're just bringing definitions. And after that, we're going to shift away from it. Of course, we've all sinned. We're in a very human body. The Alter Rebbe understands that. What he's trying to bring towards us is you are able to achieve this. How? Not even in your lifetime, but in this moment, right? In this moment right now, most of us are not sinning. This is a good thing. Right? And in the next 10 seconds, we can also probably try not to think bad thoughts about other people and try not to whisper Lashon Hara to someone else and just focus on learning a part of godly Torah. And in this moment, right now, we have the inclination to sin. It's right there. It's super present. It's in our minds. It's in our hearts. And we're not sinning, which is amazing. Right? So in this moment, in learning the Tanya, we have achieved, in a small measure, 10 seconds of living according to the life of a Beinoni. And the Alter Rebbe is basically saying, let's just stretch those 10 seconds out. Right? It's 10 seconds. Once we got that, we could do another 10 seconds and another 10 seconds. And of course, we're going to sin. And of course, we're going to make a mistake. And we know what to do from there. We could just realign ourselves back to who we're supposed to be doing, striving towards becoming the Beinoni. Right? It's not supposed to be depressing, like, oh my goodness, I'm a Rasha. It's not safe for show or shine. That's not the point. The point is not to label yourself as who we are right now, because right now in this moment, we're not. We're very fluid. We're constantly changing. So again, it's not about limiting yourself. It's about just understanding terms and knowing what we're striving towards. Okay? Any questions so far?
That's empowering.
Right. It shouldn't be debilitating. It shouldn't be depressing. The idea is that we're supposed to feel like he believes in us. The Baal Tam is bringing a belief towards us. Okay. Now, something I just want to bring in to help us shift away from being in a space of judgment or being in a space of judging others or ourselves is the understanding that a lot of what we're going to be discussing here is our thoughts and what happens on the inside, what happens at the source, right? Because our external ways of serving God are all basically coming from our motivations, our inclinations, our desires, right? It comes from our minds, comes from the inside. What do I want? I want to serve Hashem, so I'm going to do this mitzvah. I want to do this avera, so I'm going to give into it. So what I want to bring out a little bit here is, in this journey of going through the Tanya, what I would love to invite you to do is to start listening out for the words in your mind, listening out for the phrases, the judgments, the oft-repeated thoughts that come to you again and again and again. So it could be something like negative things, negative judgments that I have on myself, positive judgments that I have on myself. But it's just interesting to start listening out for them, because this is going to be an internal journey. It means that we're only meeting here once every 2 weeks. It means that in between, you want to start listening out inside yourself. What are the thoughts that are happening inside my brain? So to give you a very quick example. So if I'm someone who thinks of myself as a Russia all the time, right? Now that you learned what a Russia is, you might start walking away from this and thinking like, oh, I'm a Russia. And I've definitely done one sin. So what's it going to stretch if I do another sin, right? I'm still in that category. And what I'm trying to bring here is that you want to really stay very present to those thoughts. And hear that if I'm making myself limited to this one type, then I'm going to stay